Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. So Hurricane Irene was not the apocalypse, end of the world, storm of the century that the East Coast feared. She was nothing to sneeze at, even as a tropical storm. Big cities shut down billions of dollars in damage, but no underwater Manhattan, no epic region-wide destruction of the kind that was warned. Hindsight is always 20/20, but still, did we overhype this one? Did our media, our politicians, as we enter what climatologists say may be an age of wilder weather, how do we strike the right balance? This hour on Point, preparedness versus panic over big weather events. You can join the conversation. Where's the right line between safety and hype? Did we cross it with Irene? Are you happier safe than sorry? Or is the media too ready to blow up every storm to make Irene a monster? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, we are well aware that many people are still dealing with the aftermath of this storm, but we're looking at the arc of the coverage. Flooding still going on this morning, millions without power, but not exactly what was predicted, projected. Here was Friday's edition of ABC's World News. Here's Diane Sawyer speaking about the damage that Hurricane Irene could do to New York City.
And good evening to all of you from New York City, where we, along with millions of Americans along the East Coast, are getting ready. These skyscrapers about to face something most have never faced before, a direct hit from Hurricane Irene. For the first time ever, as we said, 250,000 people in this city alone have been told to get up and move out of the way, with projections showing floods could swamp the lower part of Manhattan, including Ground Zero, where workers are clearing out, too.
The animation showed those floods sweeping into lower Manhattan. Historic. On Friday, Weather Channel meteorologist Brian Norcross spoke with MSNBC's Martin Bashir about the potential impact of Hurricane Irene.
You were very clear yesterday in your warnings to me. So is the storm fulfilling your expectations?
Unfortunately, Martin, it is. This looks like the potential for the hurricane of our lifetimes here because of the magnitude of the effects over the incredible scope of area.
Hurricane of our lifetimes. The president got right in on it at Blue Heron Farm on Martha's Vineyard. Before leaving with his family, the president said people needed to take Hurricane Irene seriously.
I cannot stress this highly enough. If you are in the projected path of this hurricane, you have to take precautions now. Don't wait. Don't delay. We all hope for the best, but we have to be prepared for the worst.
And in a news conference Friday, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg said he was ordering a 250,000 residents out of the city by 5 p.m. Saturday.
We are today issuing a mandatory, I repeat the word mandatory, evacuation order for all New Yorkers who live in the low-lying Zone A coastal areas in all five boroughs that are at greatest risk of damage relating to Irene.
And out went many, many New Yorkers, and up came the storm. But as it traveled, it was falling from a more powerful hurricane to less powerful hurricane, and finally, tropical storm. Now, the flooding has been severe. The power loss for millions has been a problem. The damage estimated in the many millions, but it wasn't exactly what was projected. Joining me first today with the latest from New York State is Jim Axelrod, national correspondent for CBS News. He's in a car right now traveling north to assess the damage upstate. Jim, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Well, you're on your way to where, Jim? To report on what?
So we're told that there's a town, we know there's a town, Windham, New York, which is upstate, sort of off the Hudson, a little west of the Hudson, right up the New York State Thruway, about 25, 30 miles, and it was just absolutely swamped by rising creeks and rivers, and much of the town has been sort of washed away. Now, getting there seems to be a little bit of an issue because large sections of the New York State Thruway have been closed. So we're just trying to get up there to see what we can see and assess what the situation is. But to your point that you're making this morning, let's just remember that we live in the post-Katrina world, and no politician, if they're going to err, is going to err on the side of waiting too long, because it is such a scarring. I mean, those words, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Yep.
They are absolute frontal lobe and every politician as far as not being that guy who blew it on a hurricane call.
What about the media, Jim? I mean, here's the Times reporting on the hurricane, or ultimately tropical storm, when it finally chugged into New York on Sunday. It was like an overweight jogger just holding on at the end of a run. Officials, the Times, saying it once worried it might turn Manhattan into Atlantis. You know, is the media getting too much in a lather here or not? What do you think?
As a once overweight jogger, let me say I object to the characterization. I actually would say this, Tom. You got to remember, as far as the reporting of this storm, New York is the media capital of the world. And if there was any error going on, it was obviously that people in the media capital of the world are going to see a direct threat, and perhaps the sense of perspective sometimes is adjusted accordingly. I would say this, though. If this storm had been in some other part of the country, it would have been covered, I think, while the same number of teams may have been dispatched, the same number of resources may have been applied, there may have been a little bit more of ability to attach some perspective and distance and place it in a context earlier that this thing is petering out. I will say at CBS, though, that we were very careful all through the coverage to make sure that we were reporting with balance and perspective.
Jim, I know you're on your way to report right now. I'll just keep you for another half a minute. But what about you've been along a correspondent out there when these things happen. I mean, what's the kind of guidance you get from your producers and editors back at CBS Central? Are they saying, hey, Jim, can't you stand where there's a little more wind? We need a little more flap in your jacket, a little more, you know, salt water in your hair.
Yeah, you know, I think the notion of hanging on to the flagpole, you know, in our current media climate, there's never going to be a shortage of places you can turn to find somebody in their waders, somebody in the ocean, somebody hanging onto a flagpole. And our guidance is this: if there is some way in which you're going to enhance a viewer's understanding of what's going on by standing out there and showing them what the conditions are like, then do it. But I think we're almost in a little bit of a postmodern hurricane coverage environment where, you know, you run the risk of also looking a little silly if you're not doing something that's actually going to enhance a viewer's understanding. It's become an ever more sophisticated audience, especially at watching things like hurricane. And I can't tell you how many times I hear from people, boy, there's nothing stupider looking than a reporter standing out there getting blown around when it could be a danger or a risk to their safety. So we try to sort of attach that kind of balance to it.
Jim Axelrod, national correspondent with CBS News, headed up to upstate New York, where there's still serious flooding there, Vermont and beyond, going on. Jim, good luck, be safe, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We're talking today about hurricane or tropical storm Irene and how to find the right balance between safety and hype in an age of what may be, climatologists say, extreme weather. Also with us today from Princeton, New Jersey, is Heidi Cullen, former correspondent and climate expert for the Weather Channel. She's now a research scientist and correspondent for Climate Central. She's author of The Weather of the Future, Heat Waves, Extreme Storms, and Other Scenes from a Climate-Changed Planet. She joins us today from her office. Her house is one of the millions that lost power in the storm. Irene. Heidi Cullen, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So here's former media reporter for The Washington Post, now with The Daily Beast, Howie Kurtz, and his headline on all the coverage coming in to Hurricane, then Tropical Storm Irene, is a hurricane of hype. What about it, Heidi Cullen? What's your assessment?
Yeah, you know, I saw that Howie was really upset about the coverage. And honestly, I have to say, having been at the Weather Channel during Katrina, when there was a real sense that, you know, we felt like, oh, my God, what could we have done more of to really strike the tone properly? You know, I'm a big believer in the sense that we have to hope for the best, prepare for the worst, and we really need to help keep people out of harm's way. That is what our job is as broadcasters. And, you know, this was, I think, a storm that we were all ready to take very seriously. After several winter storms hit the Northeast, where there was a feeling that, you know, maybe the tone wasn't set properly, I really felt like this was a moment when our leaders, our elected officials, stood up and led and sent clear messages. And, you know, and that folks, you know, we all expect a certain amount of hype, but I felt like there was a real push to get the message out and, you know, do we need to provide more context? You know, I think Jim Axelrod said it well. We have to provide balance and perspective. We also need to provide context. So I think this was one of those situations where we were focused on the near term, but, you know, we could have also stepped back and provided some additional context. But overall, you know, I am just so happy to see that folks took this very seriously and that it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
You're one of these big climatologists, PhD and all the rest, who says we are in or headed into an age of extreme weather. And it leaves us thinking about the sort of social psyche in a time like this. I mean, are we going to be sort of, you know, every time you turn around, warned of an apocalypse over the next 10, 20, 50 years? And how does that sink into a culture over time?
Tom, I think what's really tricky about this is that we are moving into a period of more extreme weather. That's one of the things that we know. As the planet warms, we're going to see more floods. We're going to see more droughts. Heck, 2011 has already now just set the record for the highest number of billion-dollar disasters. And I think when I use the word context, it's to be able to step back and differentiate between what scientists call coping versus adapting. And I think what we watched play out over the past several days was forecasters working their hardest to gauge between, you know, what was the uncertainty in the track and in the intensity forecasts, and also communicate what we did know well. But then we've got to step back and look at the bigger picture. And this is where, you know, adapting comes in. Coping is really just dealing with the situation at hand, shutting down the subways, just keeping people out of harm's way, versus adapting is now stepping back and saying, okay, how are we going to make those infrastructure improvements that we desperately need? What are we going to do in the breathing room that we have now so that the next time this plays out, we are prepared in a much broader sense?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hurricane Tropical Storm Irene and how to find the right balance between safety and hype in an age of extreme weather. On Friday, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie warned residents to evacuate low-lying and vulnerable areas as the storm came bearing down on the Garden State.
To folks, again, you know, I saw some of these news feeds that I've been watching upstairs of people sitting on the beach in Asbury Park. Get the hell off the beach in Asbury Park and get out. You're done. It's 4:30. You've maximized your tan. Get off the beach.
Get the hell off the beach. Here was NBC's Today Show Friday morning. David Gregory and Ann Curry looking ahead to Irene's impact potential on the East Coast.
There is some good news this morning. The storm did weaken slightly overnight, but we want to underline slightly. This is still a very powerful hurricane, and forecasters say this could be a weather event for the ages.
We want to give you a look at the projected path. Irene is expected to pound the whole eastern coastline. And Max Mayfield, the retired director of the National Hurricane Center, has said that this track is one of his greatest nightmares.
Greatest nightmares, weather event for the ages. On the Today Show this morning, host Matt Lauer and the Weather Channel's Jim Cantore talked about the question of whether Irene's potential for damage was overhyped. Matt Lauer said it was.
When this storm made landfall in New Jersey and New York, we were seeing reporters on the field talking about sustained winds of 45 miles an hour, 55 miles an hour. Now, in all the years we've been reporting on hurricanes, that is not a Category 1 hurricane. In your opinion, did the National Hurricane Center keep this storm labeled a Category 1 hurricane simply to keep people afraid and safe? And is that appropriate?
No, I don't think they did at all. I mean, there was always discussions probably right through this, especially the second half of this thing, about how if you went up with height, there were very much stronger winds. And those hurricane winds, there was a chance those would
mix down. But that's not in the past how we've labeled hurricanes. When they hit Florida and the coast of the Atlantic coast, we call them Category 1 if it's 75 miles an hour sustained and above. That's not what happened in this one.
No,
why?
But as it's coming up the coast, it was still technically a hurricane.
Technically a hurricane. Hanging on to that, New York Mayor Bloomberg had a lot of questions to answer about why he evacuated when it wasn't so bad in the event. He said, you know, he did just the right thing, I mean, ordering evacuations, shutting down mass transit because nobody died.
Maybe it was just luck, but the bottom line is we'd make the same decisions again without hesitation.
We're looking today at this balance between safety and hype in an age when climatologists say we may be seeing a lot more extreme weather. We're digging in on sort of the culture of this, the society's reaction to this, leadership reaction, and the media's role. Heidi Cullen is with us. She's a veteran of the Weather Channel, the first on-air climate expert, PhD there at the Weather Channel on the climate. Joins us from Princeton, New Jersey today, author of The Weather of the Future. With us right now as well, from Austin, Texas, is Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, fellow at the James Baker Institute for Public Policy, author of The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. He was right in the middle of Katrina. Douglas Brinkley, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Tom.
You lived through what has become the benchmark for just how bad it can be. You've been watching the media the last few days as the country, the East Coast in particular, prepped for Irene. What lessons are you drawing from the way these things are being treated as they bear down on us, Douglas Brinkley?
Well, I think we've learned a lot of the wrong lessons of Katrina. I mean, we're using the word Katrina to scare people in the wrong ways. If you recall, when we had the BP oil spill in the Gulf, people were saying, is this Obama's Katrina? And the media used the term there. So the second any hurricane comes, even though it's a Category 1, that's not going to be a direct hit, but it's drifting off from a coastal area, the media is hyping it as if it was a Category 4 about to slam directly into Gulfport and Biloxi, Mississippi. They're very different storms, but the sound of commentators, the sense of doom coming was equal. And that's unfortunate because the truth of the matter is what you didn't hear these last few days are people talking about living in the age of climate change or living in an era of global warming. I am in Austin. It's 107. We have a major drought going on here, and people in Russia are having the worst drought ever there. Record temperatures breaking everywhere. The big story, the mega story here is the climate story, not overhyping a particular storm, calling it the next Katrina, and then it doesn't become that.
Well, we'll go to climate. I mean, that's obviously the huge context here. But just to stick with the news for a second, Heidi Cullen, I mean, you've watched this for a long time. Here's the New York Times quoting Chuck Scarborough at New York's NBC affiliate and said on air on Sunday, "But we're in the news business. We deal in doom." Now, if we're in times when people are hearing about climate change and very doomy prognoses of what we may be facing, does that become more problematic? Is it possible, we fall in love with doom or we become doom addicts in the media or beyond in the culture, Heidi?
Well, I think what's so interesting is that, Tom, we're actually having this conversation on the anniversary of Katrina's landfall.
Yeah. Yep.
August 29th is a Cat 3. So, I think that we all look around us and we see that there are tremendous vulnerabilities. We've got basically 50 million people within 50 miles of the coast. We know that our coasts are tremendously vulnerable. And, we've got a massive drought going on in the South right now. So I think we are all aware of the fact that we have to begin to look at ways to invest in our infrastructure. I think that's where this notion of coping with an extreme weather event, but then doing long-range planning and adapting to it. And, the point that a lot of folks came back to with, for example, Katrina, was that the Dutch, for example, use a 1 in 10,000-year event around which they plan and build their infrastructure. We've now brought New Orleans up to a 1 in 100-year event, and we know that climate change is changing the statistics of these extremes so that in New York, for example, the 1 in 100-year event now happens once every 80 years, and by the middle of the century, it's going to be happening once every 20 years. So these extreme events will only continue to get worse as our infrastructure ages.
Well, here, Douglas Brinkley, we've got these events. Heidi Cullen, she's got a PhD in this stuff. She says we're going to have more of them. Then it hits our media sphere. It hits our political sphere. And we see what the reaction is. I've got a lot of reaction online here. Here's a listener who says the roots of this are the Weather Channel, which pre-internet would treat any storm like CNN treats the news on war, all to sell more soap. Here's another. ADKS writes, I totally agree the media overdoes it just about everything, but in situations where lives can be saved, it pays to be a little overcautious. Spud says all events must be jacked up now to maximum volume to gain any public recognition at all, or I should say dangerously sad to go with that dynamic. But here's one from Vermont. Chev says it wasn't overhyped in Vermont where they're dealing with the flooding. What about this chemistry, Douglas Brinkley? Here we've got a reality of climate and weather, and it meets a reality of our media structure, our political structure.
Well, you put that clip on of Governor Christie, and he was right. Get out of Asbury Park. Everybody needed to evacuate. I don't blame Michael Bloomberg in New York for doing what he did. I think we actually did quite well during this particular crisis. My concern is we're taking one monstrous scenario and we apply it to kind of a narrative. So the next hurricane brewing, we'll always use language like the storm of a lifetime, a big one. And then the cameras were painting for anything. Like we don't really even have a Category 1 storm, but here is a tree that's blowing a little crookedly. They started wanting to they felt desperate, the media, to find images to equal the disaster they were predicting, and it was skewing the news terribly over the weekend. I think the media, generally speaking, behaved badly. How does one fix it? Have a little bit of historical knowledge and respect for the, 2000 dead of Katrina.
Yep.
Recognize that it was a man-made disaster, that of many of those deaths in New Orleans because of Lego levees, horribly built levees, and the city flooded. And bring your cameras right now and watch the glaciers melt in Alaska. We are losing our polar caps. The seas are rising and getting warmer. It's been a record year of floods in Pakistan to Queensland and the Mississippi Basin. One can go on and on. There is a large story. We're living in the age of global warming, and for every, Bill McKibben out there who's trying to tell people about it, the media doesn't cover it until it's like in their face, the disaster. Then they'll do it for 2 or 3 days and then walk away from the story. If the President of the United States isn't going to talk about global warming anymore because it's a tough issue to raise, it doesn't have a high Q factor talking about global warming, the media is going to have to get on top of the big story of our age, which is climate change, and start educating people about it, and not in a panicked way, but in a way where maybe we can make some decisions based on that, such as should we build that Keystone pipeline from, moving the tar sands of northern Alberta to the Gulf of Mexico. That'll essentially stop windmills and solar panels from being built. Some environmentalists think it's the single worst thing we could do is to build this pipeline across America. We need to have that talk and have global warming part of the discussion, not just jobs, jobs, jobs.
Talk about that, but it's more like storm of the century, as you say, when it happens. Doug Brinkley, please stand by. Heidi Cullen, let's go to our listeners. Iowa City, Iowa, far from the path of Hurricane Irene, but watching like the rest of the country. Marcia, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Glad to be here, Tom.
What do you think?
I'm with Obama. Better safe than sorry. Weather is an unpredictable force, and although we have people that forecast the weather, they don't make the weather. And Katrina is America's shame. We've learned to be prepared, and one of the ways to be prepared is to be ready, and you're better off to jump the gun a little.
So as you watched from Iowa, in no danger of being hit by Irene, did you think, oh, my gosh, New York City is about to come to an end? It's going to explode in a shatter of glass. It's going to be flooded and gone. I mean,
the only thing I was concerned about was looting. I thought it made a whole lot of sense to get people out of the way. I'm a practical girl. I'm from the farm. And I know the weather is something that can blow you away.
Better safe than sorry, and we've got it loud and clear there, Marcia. Thanks for that. Let's get down in the storm track a little bit. Charleston, South Carolina, Beth is calling. Hi, Beth. You're on the air. What do you think, Beth? Hello, Beth. Are you there, my friend? Beth, stick with us. We'll try and get you up. Jessica in Nashville, Tennessee. Jessica, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think the point that you were all starting to make is exactly right. I don't start to panic until I see it on every single channel. Well, I don't need Matt Lauer to tell me about the weather. I have the Weather Channel.
But isn't that his job? I mean, he's with a big national TV network. Shouldn't he be talking about it if it's that large?
But in context, in in small doses or in big doses, depending on. But that's the conversation here, is that they've gone overboard. You know, it's on every single channel. It's 24 hours. And it doesn't need to be 24 hours. That's where people have gotten overdone with it. I'm over it, you know. There's the Weather Channel, and I want experts. Matt Lauer talking about it does nothing for me. I mean, I like the guy. I watch the show.
Right.
But, you know, I want experts. I want Heidi, you know. I want Heidi telling me about it.
Okay, we'll do that. Beth, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. And let's get the one from Charleston. Beth, South Carolina. Beth, you're on. I hope we've got you now.
I hope so, too, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Thanks.
Great. As you know, I lived through Hurricane Hugo here 20-some years ago, and we're more accustomed to having hurricanes down in this part of the country. And so in that regard, I don't believe the press was over the top, perhaps just a little bit, but Irene was affecting a part of the country that has no clue what all these hurricanes are like. And so I felt that the coverage was appropriate for folks that aren't familiar with dealing with hurricanes.
Yeah. Beth, I appreciate your call there. Heidi Cullen, if indeed it had gone into New York City, it would have been the first time in decades that a hurricane would have actually descended on that city. Maybe that justifies just about everything. And yet you saw all the sort of, you know, storm of the century, kind of end of the world talk. What's going on with that? Is that giving fair warning, or is that, as one of our listeners said online, selling soap with fear over weather?
Well, you know, I am totally with our listeners here. We've got Jessica from Nashville, which experienced a 100-year flood, and then Beth with her experiences in Hugo. I think the word context is really important, and, you know, just important to keep in mind. For example, the return rate for a Category 3 storm for New York City is about once every 70 years. A Category 1 is once every 20 years. So I think the thing we need to be circling back to and asking ourselves is what we really would be bad for us to do right now would be to say, once the cleanup is done, we stop talking about this storm. And what we really need to do is begin to ask the tougher questions about how do we prevent the kind of flooding that we saw in Vermont? I mean, all that inland flooding was really catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And again, this points us back to infrastructure. So if the conversation about hype ends this week, once the storm is truly gone, then we've done ourselves a disservice, because this is a much bigger question about, you know, as Americans, what do we do to protect ourselves from these extreme events?
We're going to go to Bill McKibben of Vermont in a moment here. We'll look at that. But while we've got you, Doug Brinkley, what about the hype aspect here? I mean, I understand that you didn't leave New Orleans when Katrina was coming down because you felt like you'd heard the warnings so many times before. Do we, you know, leave Americans inured to these warnings? If we warn and it doesn't happen, and the next time they don't go.
It's not the warnings. I mean, obviously, when you start calling everything the next Katrina, and you're taking when Katrina was about to make landfall was going to be a direct Category 4 hit, it became a Category 3. Mm-hmm. This was looking on the coast to New York as a 1, not a 3, and not a direct hit, but coming up the coast. So it was just different and needed to be reported differently. But there's a larger concern that I have, and it's just that it isn't the emergency, it isn't the evacuation, it's not what the politicians did in this crisis. It's the ignoring of global warming by people that we've elected to office, ignoring the big issue of our time about what fossil fuels are doing. And these are interconnected. We can't go up. We missed Irene, and people don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm in the drought right now at 107. In Austin, and it's only people like Bill McKibben, we need to be listening to him, because these are the people that are telling us about the age that we're living in. You know, the Civil War, African Americans were treated shabbily in the South after the Civil War, and it was only when CBS News started bringing the cameras in every night covering the Civil Rights Movement that it changed things. The media can't just cover a tornado and a hurricane and an earthquake and not talk about how the planet is radically being affected by climate change right now. That needs to be a lead story every night. I didn't even hear it mentioned in entire last 4 days of programming of Irene.
Douglas Brinkley, please thank you so much for joining us there, Doug, in Austin, Texas today. Really appreciate it. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about hurricane slash tropical storm Irene and how to find the right balance between safety and hype in an age of extreme weather, we're told. Here's Anne-Marie writing in on Facebook from Vermont, saying, listening to On Point up here, we didn't experience the hype everyone's focused on. She says, Vermont has massive flooding and road closures, bridges taken down, buses and cars washed down village streets, and on it goes. Here was the president yesterday speaking in the Rose Garden at the White House about the ongoing recovery effort in the aftermath of Irene.
I do want to underscore that the impacts of this storm will be felt for some time, and the recovery effort will last for weeks or longer. Power may be out for days in some areas, and we will support our state and local partners in every way that we can as they work to restore power in those areas.
The president yesterday. Heidi Cullen joins us from Princeton, New Jersey. She lost power to her house, a veteran of the Weather Channel. She's now at Climate Central, author of The Weather of the Future, Heat Waves, Extreme Storms, and Other Scenes from a Climate-Changed Planet. We'll hear in just a moment from environmentalist Bill McKibben. Get his view of what's going on. What's yours? Omaha, Nebraska, Bernard is calling. Bernard, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Say thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I listened to the information regarding Irene over the weekend, and I would say there's a lot of hype and vying for a position to sell channels. 30-plus years ago, we had three of them. Today, we have those three, plus probably a couple of dozen more, which includes all the cable channels. So therefore, these individuals are going to be out there looking for a spot to build their name, and therefore we may get a lot of sensationalism. Otherwise, the reporting is good, and that certainly doesn't diminish the impact of that particular storm.
Yeah, Bernard, I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here from Storm Path, South Carolina, Mount Pleasant. Nate, thank you for calling. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What did you see? What do you see?
Well, I understand the topic and what you're going on about with the media, because it can be overwhelming that no matter where you turn, you see all this storm coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I disagree with is that panic. It might be the fact that I'm from South Carolina, but I didn't see anybody panicking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was good to get the information in, and it's, you know, do we make preparations? Do we pack up our things? Do we leave? And it allows us to be prepared, but I'm not exactly seeing anybody panicking.
Not
all the news coverage and everything else didn't show anybody panicking about it. Maybe a bit exhausted about hearing about it over and over.
Right,
but nobody's actually panicking about it.
Well, that's good, and it's good to hear. You've got experience in South Carolina. As you say, people definitely need the information. I guess part of the question is how much, and is it the right information? Does it insist on looking at the doom side when it may not all be on that side? You heard Matt Lauer there earlier going back and forth with the Weather Channel rep about how they define hurricane at this point. And Matt's saying, look, that's not the way we defined it. You're sort of defining it down here. Heidi Cullen, I'm curious how you anticipate media coverage of the weather is going to evolve. If you are correct, as a highly experienced and educated climatologist, if we're headed into more extreme weather, if we're already there, what does that mean over time? Does the media become inured to it? Does it ever begin to get a little more chill about it? I mean, I'm looking online this morning. We've got a clip from some animation that was put together by some folks in Taiwan, kind of making fun of the United States, talking about all the typhoons that have hit them already this year and more to come, and then throwing in clips of American media, you know, sort of waving their hands in the air, and the Taiwanese saying, come on, Americans, calm down a little bit about this. Get the information, but not so hyped. Where are we going here in this weather environment, Heidi?
Well, I'll give you my dream scenario. My hope is that we really, you know, we get back to your original question, Tom, is what's the right balance? And for me, the right balance is, you know, in the moment, in the short term, in the midst of the extreme weather event, we are working on the forecast, we are explaining the uncertainties, we are providing the context. But then when Monday rolls around, rather than doing the armchair quarterback thing, we're saying, okay, how do we learn from this? How do we plan for the future? Irene may be gone, but there's plenty of other Irenes that are going to be coming in the form not just of hurricanes, but of droughts, of flooding events, of tornadoes. And how do we really think through on the long term, think about how to keep our country safe as we have more and more people living in dangerous places. That's my hope.
We heard Douglas Brinkley say he didn't hear a whiff of that in the coverage he saw and listened to over the weekend. Why is that? Do you think that he was talking with us from Austin, Texas. His governor, Rick Perry, is now campaigning for the Republican nomination for president. They've got an epic drought and heat that goes on and on. Rick Perry is very, very openly dismissive, skeptical of climate change itself, man-made climate change. Is it possible the news media is afraid to bring in what I guess you would say is the sort of scientific perspective on the weather, or are they just not sure you're right?
Well, I think we are living in the era of asking hard questions, you know, and in the same way that we can think about coastal storm surge along the Northeast, we have to think about long-range planning for water resources, for example, in the Southwest. And these are tough questions for anyone running for office, and I think that it's our responsibility, because at the end of the day, it comes back to us and the message that we're giving back to the media in terms of what we expect from them, in terms of their tone, and we need to give our leadership the permission to talk about these hard questions. And climate is probably the toughest question out there, but if we don't talk about it, we're just going to continue to get hurt by these extreme events. So it's in our best interest to have these hard conversations.
Let me get one more call here from Vermont. Windsor, Vermont. Sharon, you're on the air, Sharon.
Hi, Tom. I agree with the guest that there wasn't too much hype. Up here, we've had quite a lot of flooding.
Yeah.
I would like to see the news media, however, calibrate their remarks a little by saying that storms do wear out as they head up into, far from where the eye is, or as they continue along, you know, days or hours in, after they've begun, so that they can wear out.
Yeah, well, that's true, but ironically, here you are all the way up in Vermont, and Vermont really getting whacked by the flooding at the tail of Irene here, Sharon.
I wouldn't want to see a hurricane if this is a tropical storm. I also wanted to say, in terms of your guest who's not on the air now, Douglas Brinkley,
yes,
that the news media is not going to talk about global warming or climate change as long as it's owned by people who don't accept that it's a reality.
Well, do you think they should talk about it in the middle of these weather reporting stories?
Absolutely, I think they should. But, I mean, if we have people running for president who don't believe in evolution, we certainly have people who don't believe in climate change. And until we elect the right people, we're not going to get the right stuff on the media.
Sharon in Windsor, Vermont, I appreciate your call. Heidi Cullen, standby in Princeton, New Jersey, joining us right now from Washington, D.C., is environmentalist and author Bill McKibben, co-founder of 350.org, the environmental group working on carbon and the atmosphere and the climate crisis, author of The End of Nature. He's standing outside the White House right now in a protest against that Keystone oil pipeline down from the tar sands of Canada that Douglas Brinkley was talking about. Bill McKibben, thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Heidi. It's really good to be with you, and it's good to be here in Washington in the middle of the biggest civil disobedience protest about climate change that there's yet been. But I got to say, it's incredibly hard to be listening to this because, you know, I'm from Vermont, and our state is just washing away. I just got off the phone with my wife, and the next town over is evacuated, and, the road to our town is out. And it's the third time this year that this has happened in Vermont alone. When you look around the rest of the country and the rest of the world, that pattern of weather events, of extreme weather, just is telling us that this is what the early stages of climate change feels like, that the atmosphere is holding about 4% more water than it did 40 years ago, and that means that the dice are loaded for deluge and downpour and flood and also for drought, and that's what we're seeing, which I guess the only good news I got to offer you is I'm watching 100 people getting ready to go be arrested, including Jim Hansen, our foremost climate scientist, in front of the White House to try and persuade the president to block this tar sands pipeline that'll be, you know, just the next pathway for more fossil fuel to flow into this economy.
Well, Bill, what about, then let's look first at media coverage of this storm as it was approaching this country. Vermont ends up hit harder than expected. New York hit less hard than feared. It wasn't all deeply flooded out in Lower Manhattan and all the rest. What about the way the media is presenting these manifestations of climate and weather to the country?
I mean, the hurricanes are just a great excuse for the media to get out the chest waders from the, you know, supply closet, and so everybody can go stand next to a palm tree bent over in the wind. I mean, the media coverage, you know, I mean, it's entirely to be expected, but it is sad that nobody really gets down to talking about what's actually, you know, going on. I mean, in this case, I mean, it's not that global warming doesn't cause hurricanes. Hurricanes are caused when tropical waves come off the coast of Africa and the spin of the earth begins to set them in motion. But this one was riding a course of absolutely record warm water. It's never been hotter water than the last 2 years off the New York and New Jersey coast. That's why everybody was going on red alert. That's why the models were flashing the way they were, but that's not what people were talking about. In a larger sense, the problem is, you know, is that when there's not a hurricane, you can't get anyone to focus on the biggest single problem that we've ever faced as a civilization. As Heidi says, if we're not talking about it, the odds that we're going to deal with it are small.
What about our cultural psychology here then, Bill? I mean, the media would not have all those heavy breathing warnings on if they didn't expect people would be tuning in and be glued to that. It's right there.
There's a lot to be said for this sort of argument that we're evolutionarily adapted to think about very short-term threats and what's coming at us and all of that. And that's, you know, that's just part of who we are. But it better not be all of who we are. And as I say, it's not all of who we are. We've turning out hundreds of people, 100 people every day down here in Washington for the last week to get arrested at this tarsandsaction.org thing. Today, it's almost 100 clerics from every faith you can imagine. These are people who are starting to think long-term about what's going on. The message is slowly spreading out, but in a, you know, in a political culture and a media culture dominated by big oil, it's hard. It's funny. I was on MSNBC the other night, and it was a really good interview, and we were talking all about this stuff, and the ad before and the ad after were both from ExxonMobil touting the great advantages of burning tar sands oil. It's tough in those ways, but given that we don't have the money to match those guys, we're finding different currencies to work in. And this 2 weeks, it's our bodies. I spent two nights in the central cell block in D.C. jail last week, which is exactly as much fun as it sounds like.
Yeah.
Now the police are treating people much more professionally and humanely, but it's very, very real. People's courage is really inspiring to see, and God bless them, because we got to get this conversation started somehow. You would hope that our president, who is a good conversationalist, would be doing it, but he's hardly uttered the words global warming in the last couple of years. We're doing what we can to kickstart it, and if people want to come down and join us, tarsandsaction.org is the place to find out what's going on.
Bill McKimmitt, across the fence from the White House, where Barack Obama, today, there for a public demonstration about the pipeline that will bring more fossil fuels out of Canada's tar sands if it goes forward into the United States. Author of The End of Nature, co-founder of 350.org. Bill McKimmitt, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Take care, Tom.
Thank you. Heidi Cullen, Bill points right at oil companies when it comes to weather coverage. Now, and Douglas Brinkley also complaining that he didn't hear more about climate in this huge weekend of coverage of weather. Do you think we're ever going to see that? And if it's not there in the proper ratio, why do you think that's the case?
Well, you know, I think that we all have a big role to play in the conversation that that needs to be had in this country. And it's funny, Jim Axelrod started us off by talking about the fact that when an event happens in the media capital of the world, so to speak, New York City, yep, you know, the conversation really focuses on that part of the country. Well, there's a ton of conversations that we need to have all over the country when it comes to climate. Things like crop yields, things like drought and water resources in the Southwest. And I think, you know, one aspect of this that's really important is that we need to get past the conversation of it's the economy versus the environment, that we have to choose one or the other. And I just want to make it really clear that that is the absolute worst false choice that we've been offered as a country, that it is not a choice between one or the other. And when it comes to something like climate change, for every 1.8 degrees it warms up, we're looking at 10% reduction in crop yields. We're looking at 5% reductions in Colorado River flow. This climate issue is not going to go away. So I just really hope that folks will talk about it more. And Tom, you're one of the people who's actually willing to have these conversations, so we're lucky to have you.
Well, if it's not in the mainstream media, if Doug Brinkley says not even a whisper of it and all that Irene covered, what do you think? Is it because it's not proven or because they're afraid? If they're afraid, why would they be afraid?
I think the culture of the media, I mean, it's really tough in this day of the 24/7 network where you're really focused on immediate timescales. And this kind of gets back to Bill McKibben's point, which is to be a smart, sophisticated society, we have to have conversations that deal with long-term problems and long-term planning. And, you know, it's a lot sexier. It's a lot more interesting to talk about sort of the immediacy of a catastrophe, but that's not the smart thing to do in the long run. And so it's really about changing the way we have these discussions. So whether it's about, you know, the up and downs of the stock market versus this long-term fiscal crisis that we're dealing with, or weather versus climate change, we've got to bring the big picture context into this conversation to really move forward as a nation.
Well, it's kind of inexorable. You start out with the question of hype or not hype. You end with the question of climate and where we're all headed. The screen just gets bigger as we go here. Heidi Cullen with Climate Central, author of The Weather of the Future. It's always great to talk with you, Heidi, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, we know that there are many of you still dealing with the aftermath of Irene there, and we don't in any way downplay that whatsoever. Good luck. We hope you dry out quickly, get your power back, and life gets underway safely for you. To all our listeners today, thanks. Good luck. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.